Hi, welcome to Stanlib's weekly economic podcast. My name is Kim Innings and I'm the chief economist within Stanlib. The intention with these weekly podcasts is to unpack some of the key economic developments that have unfolded over the past week. And this week, I think we need to focus on two specific issues. The one is the US government shutdown. They had a vote over the weekend, which should put them in a position to reopen government during the course of the coming week. So I think it would be useful to just get a quick update on that dynamic. And also linked to that, obviously, there's been this lack of economic information in the US for the past 40 days. And clearly that has done quite a lot of damage to understanding how the economy is performing. So I think a quick update on that dynamic would also be useful. The second topic is a look at South Africa's upcoming medium-term budget policy statement that happens on Wednesday this week. We've also got, importantly, the Standard & Poor's credit rating assessment on Friday this week. And there's an outside chance that they look at us a little bit more favorably, given that we're off the grey list and given that we expect the medium-term budget policy to be a little bit more encouraging in terms of various fiscal parameters. So I think a discussion around that dynamic would also be useful. The US Senate held their 15th vote on trying to resolve the US government shutdown over the weekend. They met on Saturday and Sunday. They held the vote on Sunday and they got the 60 votes required to end the US government shutdown. So that certainly is good news. If I look at the breakdown of the vote, 8 Democrat senators voted in support of the Republican Party. 1 Republican senator voted against effectively their own party, but that was enough to procure the 60 votes, and so the resolution was adopted. Now, the resolution that they effectively are agreeing to was what was put forward by the House of Representatives some time ago. And that amounts to a temporary funding of government. Now, the House suggested a temporary funding of government through to the 21st of November, which obviously wouldn't make sense right now because of the short time period between where we are now and the 21st of November. But clearly the House put that resolution together some time. So what is going to happen, as far as I can see, is that the Senate will redraft the proposal and put forward this idea of the government being funded through to the end of January next year. And I think what's important to note about that is it's a temporary funding. In other words, it's not a final resolution or a sustained resolution. And so because of that, they will then add some additional fiscal resolutions to the proposal. And they've also agreed, I think, to have a separate vote on the tax credits relating to the Affordable Care Act, which is at the heart of the dispute between the Democrats and the Republicans. So what will they'll put this proposal together, and then they have to send that back to the House of Representatives, who need to approve it, and hopefully they do that during the course of this week, and then the president has to sign that off. Once all of that has been completed, then the US government can reopen and the funding can commence, which would include back pay for those people that haven't been paid during the shutdown, which would be most of the people. And clearly that when that back pay occurs, it will provide some boost to the US economy. In terms of economic data, there hasn't been any official data produced for the last 40 days, and clearly that has hurt our ability to assess the performance of the US economy. So once the government reopens, the economic data will recommence, but because the government shutdown has been in place for this many weeks, the US government itself hasn't been able to collect the underlying data needed to produce accurate information. And so it's going to take the US government a number of weeks and a couple of months to get back up and running in terms of reliable and consistent economic information. And I think realistically, we're only going to really be able to get a fair assessment of the US economy from the beginning of next year. Now, as they produce more data between now and the end of next year, it'll start to color in the story a bit. And that's going to become important for the Federal Reserve when they meet again in December. Clearly the Fed has been worried about the weakness in the labor market, and that they're not really in a position to answer their own questions because the economic information hasn't been updated. So we're hoping that enough information is produced by the time they meet in December to give us an informed decision. At this stage, the bias is towards further interest rate cuts in the US, but what we are debating is the timing of those interest rate cuts. And clearly, based on what the Chairman Powell was saying after the last FOMC meeting, they may well choose to keep rates on hold while they wait for the economic information to improve and to get more clarity on what's happening to the US economy. So that is a distinct possibility. In which case an interest rate cut would then roll over to next year. At this stage, I think we've got to see how quickly the government can reopen, how quickly they can get the economic information up and running, and what that starts to tell us about the performance of the economy and particularly the performance of the labor market. So I think we would still argue in favor of further interest rate cuts in the US, although I think it's fair to admit that the timing of those interest rate cuts would be a little bit unclear until the US government is up and running and we have a better and more consistent flow of economic data. The second topic we want to focus on is South Africa's upcoming medium-term budget policy statement that is scheduled for release on this week, Wednesday afternoon. Now, normally the medium-term budget would be presented in October, but because the February budget was effectively delayed by a couple of months, they decided to also delay the medium-term budget. We have about 6 months of data from the SARS, from the Revenue Service, so we've got a reasonable understanding of how government revenue is performing and also in terms of government expenditure, and I must say the numbers are encouraging. Most areas of tax revenue are either ahead of budget or mostly in line with budget, and so at this stage there's an expectation that the minister will be able to present a tax revenue overrun. I think he'll be cautious in how much of an overrun he acknowledges, because clearly he doesn't want to have to revise that number lower when we get to the next year February, and we have the annual budget. But I think we're in a position to represent a decent 20 to 30 billion tax revenue overrun. And clearly that's encouraging under current circumstances. At the same time, government expenditure is slightly behind budget. I think it'll end up the year being largely in line with budget, but it means the net effect is that government's fiscal balance looks like it's improved. The deficit should be slightly lower, the primary budget surplus should be slightly bigger, and as a consequence of all of that, we are expecting that government will signal that they are able to keep the debt level under control, and that the overall feel of the budget will be one of fiscal consolidation and fiscal discipline. And clearly that's encouraging. Now obviously, there's this constant desire for the economy to do a lot better. And in order for the economy to grow faster, government would have to spend significantly more. But they're under huge constraint in terms of the overall fiscal parameters, and the government doesn't really want to embark on a massive fiscal expansion program at this stage. So from what the Minister of Finance has put forward, it is about getting to a point of fiscal consolidation. It is about trying to show fiscal discipline and then try and grow the economy off that base. So in terms of the stated objective, I think the minister is going to be able to demonstrate that we are on track to achieve that outcome, even if the growth rate remains disappointing. I think the growth rate will be addressed on a medium-term basis. In other words, I expect the minister to focus on how South Africa is going to lift the growth rate on a 2-3-5-year basis. And there are a number of factors being put in place that could well get us there, particularly private-public partnerships, the role of the private sector in the energy space, also within rail development, as well as port capacity. So I think over time, we're going to see the private sector play a bigger role in South Africa's infrastructure development, which will obviously lift the growth rate. But I think in the very short term, we're not going to see many positive growth dynamics other than a sense of trying to instill fiscal consolidation and fiscal discipline. So I think that's not necessarily a bad outcome, given taking all of the factors into account. And obviously, when you look at the balance sheet for Eskom or Transnet, they also themselves are not in a great position to expand their own infrastructure. And clearly, any sort of expansion is going to have to be on the basis of a private-public partnership. And as I mentioned previously, a number of those are underway, and we think that there will be more developments in that regard over the coming months. And I'm optimistic that on a 3 to 5 year basis, South Africa's growth rate can improve meaningfully using the vehicle of private-public partnerships. The last thing to maybe mention is that we have got Standard & Poor's making a credit rating decision on Friday this week. And the reason I'm mentioning that is not that we think that there is going to be a massive announcement. But if you go back a year, 18th of November 2024, Standard & Poor's put us on a positive outlook. In other words, our credit rating by S&P is BB minus, which is obviously below investment grade, so not a great credit rating. But a year ago, they put us on a positive outlook. And if I look at how things have developed more recently, there is an argument to follow through on that positive outlook and to upgrade South Africa one notch. That would still leave us below investment grade, but it would be a very good signal that we're moving in the right direction. The things I think that Standard & Poor's could well consider is the fact that the fiscal parameters look to have been contained. In other words, this ongoing focus on fiscal discipline, fiscal consolidation. I think the S&P could reflect on that positively and take that into account. The fact that we're off the grey list, that has to be net-net a positive. I don't think it's a massive boost, but at least it does contribute. And we have seen foreigners buying into our bond market more recently, particularly during August and September. So I think there are a couple of factors that S&P can focus on. In terms of the things that would hold back S&P is the fact that the economy is still not gaining significant momentum. If you look at the growth rate projection for this year, it's slightly above 1%, and that's below the population growth. And so clearly we're not making enough progress in terms of just outright economic growth. We're not making enough progress in terms of job creation or in trying to alleviate income and wealth inequality, or making enough progress in terms of just generally lifting broad economic conditions within South Africa. But at a double B minus, I think there is room for an upgrade if we can at least show that the fiscal parameters are being controlled and that government is making good on its promise to be disciplined. So I am mildly optimistic that Friday we could get some positive news from Standard & Poor's. We do have Moody's giving us an update on the 5th of December. So I think that's another area that we can focus on, and perhaps we can go into next year with a slightly more positive feel around the performance of the South African economy. That's all from me for this week. Hope it makes some sense, and we'll catch up again next week. Please remember that Standard Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider in terms of the FASE Act. Also, this podcast should not be construed as advice.